Let's take 3 deep breaths. And deep in breath. Here we are in our special place, looking to find some inspiration today from studying of concentration and meditation. From the Bhagavad Gita, the song of the Lord, we're singing today. We're singing the song. We're going to start right off with the concept I introduced last week. It's a Sanskrit word. We don't have a word for it in English. It's brahmacharya. 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 What is the meaning of brahmacharya? Brahmacharya literally means constantly thinking of the Absolute. Constantly thinking of the Absolute. What are we thinking of right now? Are we thinking of the Absolute? There's a word for that consciousness in Sanskrit, brahmacharya, which is easy, Satchidananda says, if you control the senses. That is why controlling the senses came to be called brahmacharya. Step one, control the senses. We decided last week that we can't really control the senses. If we touch something, we feel something, we taste something, we taste it. But we can step back from them and observe the senses and be once removed. Just like I am choosing right now to step back from my voice as my voice is talking to you and watch my voice talking to you. It's one of my senses as I hear myself talking. We can do that. Actually, the true meaning of brahmacharya is to put your attention entirely on Brahman. Brahman is a word for God. Word for God. Put your attention entirely on Brahman, the Absolute One, God. That's not possible if you allow the senses to go astray. In other words, become invested in everything you taste, hear, and even our mind is like a sense, isn't it? Become invested in our mind and our thoughts. Brahmacharya. Keep the focus in observer state. Brahmacharya. And the more we do that and are committed to be in that state of brahmacharya, more things quiet down for us, and the more we become at peace as observers. At peace. It's another way to become at peace. Withdrawing from the senses and being in touch with brahmacharya. Satchidananda is going to talk about that. Let's look at the sutra now, which mentions brahmacharya. Sit thus in yoga meditation. We talked about how to sit in yoga meditation. Serene and fearless, firm in the vow of brahmacharya, the commitment. And with the mind calm, think of me and only me. These are instructions for meditation. As we'll see, we can think of our life as a meditation, in addition to the meditation practice that we have. Sit thus in yoga meditation, serene and fearless. Can we be serene and without fear? Are we afraid of things? Firm in the vow of brahmacharya, thinking of the absolute, and with the mind, therefore, calm, think of me and only me. I watched a TV program a couple of nights ago. Rick Steves is his name, talked about the rise of fascism in Europe during the 1920s and the 1930s. First Benito Mussolini in Italy, then Adolf Hitler, Germany, even Franco in Spain were all fascists. And there are two essential ingredients to their rise to power. One was absolute control over the media, so that everything that went out was propaganda, only saying positive things about the dictator. Mm-hmm. No negative things whatsoever. That was one leg. The other leg that fascism stood upon was fear, having people be afraid of something. And the fear came from a time of anger. People were angry after the Second World War because things were a mess. So many millions of people died. There was that big depression in the 30s. People were angry. And from the anger, the dictators took advantage of fear. In the case of Hitler, he chose fear of Jews as a main fear to motivate people. And his dictatorship rested on fear and propaganda. Sit thus in yoga meditation, serene and fearless. Can we, in today's environment, avoid the call to fear that we see in the political discussion place? Avoid the call to fear and remain fearless. Firm in the vow of brahmacharya, experiencing the witness posture, and then with the mind calm, think of me and only me. Let's look some more into this. Satchitananda has a lot to say.
When he says, think of me and only me, to me it translates to just let go and let it be, let the thoughts pass.
Yes. Who's speaking in the Bhagavad Gita? Lord Krishna, the Jesus figure. So when he says, think of me and only me, it's as if Jesus were saying, think of me as the Spirit and only me.
Thank you.
Well, if we could do that, there would be no need to set aside time to meditate. Erase all fear from the heart means don't even be afraid of God. Some people are afraid of God.
Yeah.
Do you know that when the Bible was originally written in Greek and then, of course, translated into English, in English we have the phrase fear of God, which is probably a mistranslation. It does not mean be afraid of God. Rather, the word originally was awe. Be in awe of God. And fear had that ancient connotation of being in awe of God, not being afraid or scared, rather being in awe of God. So don't even be afraid of God. Just be serene and think of yourself that you are the child of God. One way to occupy our mind when it's busy thinking, rather than letting the thoughts wander, just return to the idea, I am a child of God, as Jesus taught. Jesus said, you're children of God.
Of course, a lot of people are afraid of their parents.
But if we're not afraid of God, we can be a child of God. Yeah. However fearsome our parents might be. Mm-hmm. It's true that some people are afraid of their mm-hmm. parents. I think, particularly in days gone by, fathers in particular felt the need to instill fear, particularly in their sons, in order to toughen them up so they could cope with the challenges of life. And then those fearsome fathers would sometimes transform, like a caterpillar transforms into a butterfly, to loving grandfather. Hoping bestowing love on the grandsons.
And hold it as long as they can and then go home.
And then leave.
Yeah.
Right.
I was thinking of, you're talking about being afraid of God, I'm thinking about the Ten Commandments that often instill fear. Right, somebody gives you a commandment, there has to be repercussion if you do not obey. And there was, I think it was Conversations with God that Lowell was doing with his group, that they, it's a completely different interpretation of the Ten Commandments. It's called the Ten Commitments.
Yes.
Which is very, very interesting. I'd like to go back and do that again.
If we hold God as someone out there, like a dictator, mm-hmm. or a stern father, mm-hmm. then we see those commandments coming from that stern father with repercussions if you don't follow them. But as you point out, if we see God as who we are, then the commandments come from within ourselves and they're like principles or commitments. They're our own commandments to ourselves coming from our own godlike nature.
Different.
I remember many, many moons ago when I decided that my idea of God, that separate thing, separate from me, who lives somewhere, maybe up in the sky, I didn't believe in that anymore. I thought I was being very much a heretic, a rebel. It was that time of life. I was in college. I think I was a sophomore. And yet I look back on that and I see there's some truth there, rejecting that concept of divinity. And it wasn't until years later when I came into this environment that I learned there's another way of looking at the divine as being a part of who I am, part of the universe. Not a stern father figure to be afraid of, huh? Mm-hmm. Think you're a child of God and you will experience fearlessness as you think of yourself as a child of God. When Lord Krishna says, think only of me, he means the oneness. Please know for certain that it's not his form or his name that he's talking about. When he says me, he means that cosmic essence, the spirit, which lives inside us and outside us. It's exactly the same when Christ said, only through me can you reach the Father. Only through me can you reach the Father. This has been used in other traditions in the sense of Jesus being a God, and only through me as God can you reach the Father. So Jesus is someone who can intercede for you with God. Satchidananda says he didn't mean his body or his person. That body didn't attain anything. Bodies don't. Although we do have myths about that. It was just a composition of elements, his body. He meant the spirit. Only through me as spirit can you reach the Father. Only through the spirit within you that Jesus was the example of can you reach the experience of the Absolute or the Father. So if we want to have the experience of the Father, there's some steps we can take. Withdrawing from our senses, noticing them, being observers of them, training the mind to, when it's busy doing nothing, perhaps to repeat, I am a child of God, I am a child of God. Letting that be our bridge over to the experience of the Father or the Absolute. And then life becomes a meditation. So our meditation practice, if we have one, just serves as a time when we totally focus and reinforce that consciousness so that later on during the day we can recall that consciousness at any time and jump back into that observer status, being in the presence of the Absolute, being a child of God. Put your mind completely on that capital S self that's within us. Think of it, and you will be serene and fearless. If you think that Absolute, you'll be serene and fearless. The scripture now has some additional advice. We need to go deeper. So Let's look at the next sloka. Number 15, by steadily and continuously practicing yoga in this way, yoga as a way of life, including meditation, the yogi wins over his mind, not in the sense of conquering it, but at being at peace with it, having it and not having the mind have her. By practicing yoga in this way, the yogi wins over his mind and realizes that peace is my nature. Krishna's nature, Jesus Christ's nature in us. Realizes that peace is my nature. This in turn leads naturally to nirvana. And that's a state that is more than peace. Does everyone have a firm idea of what nirvana means? Would you like to hear more about nirvana?
Sure.
I've heard other practitioners say that nirvana literally means blowing out. Nirvana, emptying out the mind, the self, in favor of the capital S self. So it's not adding something or learning something, it's rather eliminating or standing back from something that's there. That's nirvana, stepping back. Nirvana. Nirvana is a term often used by Lord Buddha. We hear nirvana in the Buddhist tradition, meditating in order to achieve a state of being free of the mind, having senses, but not being victims of them, being observers of them. So the more that you go into that state of nirvana, the more you naturally experience the absolute, which is called God, Christ consciousness. Nirvana is mind nakedness.
That's good.
That's how Satchitananda puts it. Mind nakedness, absolute serenity and peace. So when the mind is naked, take the clothes off, put the thoughts aside. What's left over? The absolute serenity and peace that you came into the world with, and hopefully leave the world with. And why not experience while we're in the world? Absolute serenity and peace. Your mind isn't clothed. Yourself, capital S self, isn't covered or colored with anything. It's just purely itself. Preconditioned mind, prejudgmental mind. Bless our hearts, our parents wanted to civilize us and have us be livable so that they could stand us while we were growing up. So they imbued in us the importance of judgment and the consequences if you don't follow judgments. This is good, this is bad. If you do what's good, you get to come to the dinner table. If you do what's bad, you might be sent to your room. Judgments. So we got civilized. And we take those childhood ideas and judgments forward into our adult life, and they live within us always. They never go away.
It's where we've been programmed, right? I mean, in a loving way.
Yes.
In the best that they could possibly do.
They love and us.
Now it's our job as adults to let those ideologies that doesn't serve us go.
They just wanted some peace and quiet.
Yeah. Wanted to keep us out of jail.
And keep us out of trouble, that's right. Keep us out of trouble.
It's the power of forgiveness.
Your mind, your original mind, isn't clothed. The original self isn't covered or colored with anything. You're completely free. A totally liberated person is naked in that sense. Naked of judgments, ideas, concepts. This is nirvana. The self is naked, uncovered, and that's the meaning of nirvana. The self is naked, uncovered. In order to experience this, says Lord Krishna, aha, now we know what it is. How do we get there? In order to experience this, says Lord Krishna, just think of me and only me. So how do you do that? You know, our minds are wonderful things.
Yeah.
I'm guessing that each of you at some point in time has got in your car and driven someplace. Right? Yeah. And your mind was busy the whole time.
Oh,
and when you
scary,
got there,
you don't know how you got there.
How did I get there?
Because my mind was busy. So that's evidence that our minds can do two things at once. That's the evidence. Maybe scary evidence, but it is evidence. So if the mind can do that, why can't we be driving and focused on driving while at the same time be in the experience of the absolute? I am a child of God. I am a child of God. Why can't we focus our mind there instead of letting it ramble over the things that are upsetting it, bothering it, worrying about what we have to do when we get there, having some regrets about what we did from the place we just left or yesterday? Those are things the mind loves to fulminate on. And when the mind fulminates on those things, it takes over, and that's when we drive and don't notice we're driving. If we can just notice that our mind is doing that, we can make an attempt to redirect our mind to something spiritual. I'm a child of God is one thing, a mantra is another. There are various things. The gurus recommend you have something special, a spiritual saying that you can put into your mind when it's wandering around. Actually, in the Indian tradition, when an acolyte joins an ashram, the guru gives that person their mantra. Gives it. Wouldn't that be nice if we had a lovely spiritual person who gave us our mantra? We can look in our hearts and ask our hearts to give us a mantra that works for us. That works the same. Find that mantra. I am a child of God. Whatever that we can use whenever our mind is wandering about and not letting us experience the peace that we are. Now, since minds have a life of their own, the mind is going to probably interrupt you when you begin saying that thing and go back to its upset, its worries about the future, its regrets about the past. That's okay. You can just say, thank you for sharing, and begin repeating your spiritual saying again. And no matter how many times your mind jumps away and goes back to the upsets, you can always bring yourself back. Ping pong. And just doing that is a spiritual practice. And eventually your mind, like a little puppy dog, you know, when you want a puppy dog to do something, when the puppy dog does something good, you give him a little something to eat. You have some in your pocket. When the dog does something good, give him something to eat. That's how trainers train animals. I've seen them training hawks and so on. When the hawk does something good, hawk gets something to eat. So we can do the same thing with our minds. When our minds jump up into our upsets, we can give it something good to eat. The spiritual saying, I am a child of God, or whatever our heart instructs us is ours to say. Give the mind that dream.
I listen to Chopra meditations a lot, and the one I've been listening to this 21 days that is on abundance, and he gives you Sanskrit word and tells you to, whenever your mind goes off someplace, repeat the Sanskrit word to bring yourself back to the center. And the one for yesterday was Sat Chit Ananda, which is Sat Chit Ananda's name.
Yes.
And that one is a really good one for existence, consciousness, bliss.
Yes.
And he was explaining that the bliss part of it is a big part that I forget, that we're meant to be happy.
Yes. You look at little babies when they first pop out, they're just happy.
Well, after they're held and fed.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're changed.
Cleaned up.
Yeah, that's where the image comes to mind, a one-year-old who's actually held and fed and changed, and you can see the brightness in their eyes and just the wonder, you know, one-year-old, mm-hmm. 9-month-year-old, I think it is.
And in a way, they're not happy in the way that we experience happiness.
They're
truly at bliss.
Yes.
They're truly in bliss.
Yes.
It's different than when we're happy. Our happiness comes and goes.
Yes.
Their state of bliss, unless they need their diaper change, stays.
But that baby consciousness is how I can espouse to, right? To look up towards, going back to that baby-like consciousness and the openness to learn and grow and just be and wonder. It's wonderful.
It's nice.
Yeah, it's such a beautiful
picture.
Can we, with our intellectual minds, understand that we were once those babies in a state of bliss?
Yeah.
Understand that in our intellectual mind. And so if we were in that state of bliss at one time in our life, that means it's still in us. Mm-hmm. And if we're not experiencing it now, we could. And we learn our spiritual practices so we can be in the state that's already there inside of us, just covered up with layers of judgments and thoughts.
Experience.
So experiences. It's there. In order to experience this, Nirvana, says Lord Krishna, just think of me and only me. So that's something we can give our minds to occupy our minds, so that our minds can stay busy while we search for that state of bliss that's already in us. That means think of the absolute, try to eliminate all other thoughts.
It's easier not so much to eliminate the word eliminate, it's just to acknowledge the thought is coming and it's there, but let it pass.
According to people who are accomplished in these practices, you do eventually eliminate all other thoughts. We can eliminate other thoughts in the moment as we focus on the absolute. The other thoughts aren't there, and then the other thoughts return. So they say, this is their testimony, that it is possible to eliminate other thoughts through our spiritual practices and return to that state that we see in the babies of bliss, where there's no thoughts.
Right.
They haven't eliminated thoughts. They haven't got to the point yet where they really have thoughts. Thoughts are an artifact of language.
Mm-hmm.
If you notice, all your thoughts are language.
Yes.
Some of you think in English, some in other languages. And those thoughts are in languages, aren't they? So before you learn languages, no thoughts. No thoughts, no mind. Just bliss.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah.
So that comes first.
Yes?
So that comes first.
The bliss, yes.
You begin in a state of bliss, and then we have this capability of language. They've tried to teach other animals to talk, and they don't have that capability, but a human person has the innate capability to learn a language. Something happened through, I suppose, genetics and evolution. So the plus side is we can communicate with talk. The minus side is we have all the thoughts we may or may not want with talk. Can we exploit the excellent aspect of language and minimize the influence of the negative impact of language? Try to eliminate all other thoughts. That means think of the absolute. Let's look at this absolute a little more. The absolute.
So that's why the prayer and meditation part, particularly the meditation part, just sitting in silence is so important. I need to do more of that.
Yes.
God.
Okay. It's all a beautiful teaching, Satchitananda observes, but how can you even think of the absolute? We may feel a barrier to thinking of the absolute, so he acknowledges that. It's very hard, but at least you can feel that the absolute is something vast. I do that on my meditation. Part of my meditation includes a thing I repeat. And in one of the repetitions, I envision pure space or something vast. So we can think of God or the Absolute, the Divine Principle, the Great Spirit, as something vast. I think all of us can, let's just think of something vast for a moment. Think of something vast. Think of pure space. Pure space, only pure space, vast. Everybody able to do that? So there we go. That's God. That's God. Let's call that God. Instead of the other thing we used to call God, that thing you just experienced now, why not call that God from now on? And see if it fits. Maybe it doesn't fit. Try it out. That's the absolute. That's God. Actually, that's the idea behind the personification of Vishnu. You know, there's so many names for God in the world. We have God. The Italians have Dios, and in Spanish is Dios. No, in French it's Dieu. The Germans have Gott. The Jews have Jehovah and Yahweh. Many names for God and the Absolute, the Great Spirit, American tradition. Here's another word for God, Vishnu. In Sanskrit, there are various names for God. Krishna is a personification of the divine, as Jesus is in our tradition, some traditions. Vishnu is a name for God, a name that means, here we go, what does Vishnu mean? The Absolute, unlimited. See that pure space there you just experienced? The Absolute, unlimited, omnipresent. Wasn't the pure space you just experienced everywhere? Omnipresent. How about omniscient? Was that pure space you experiencing, seeing and observing and aware of everything? Omniscient. Aware of everything in that pure space. Was the pure space aware of everything? Omnipotent. Was that pure space the source and seat of all energy and power? Maybe that's a further meditation or a further look into pure space. Omnipotent. These are the attributes of Vishnu, the intellectual attributes of Vishnu, which we can try to experience in our vision of pure, our experience of pure space, the Absolute. This is Vishnu, the Absolute. Omni this and omni that, Satchitananda says. Repeat Om. And think of Omni. Omnipotent. Omnipresent. Omniscient. Omnipowerful. Om pure space. Om the Absolute, Om. Maybe that Om is what we used to call God. For you, you have to look yourself and see. Maybe that Om. Repeat Om, think of Omni. Nothing can limit you. Just don't think of little or fractional things, Satchitananda recommends. Maybe Om is what you bring your mind back to when it's wandering around as you're driving somewhere. Bring it back to Om and Omni this and Omni that, and pure space, feeling it, feeling the Absolutes, vastness. These are things that we can try on for size. See if they work for us and see if they give us not a deeper intellectual understanding of God, but a deeper experience of the divine. That's what we're after. We've got plenty of explanations for it. We can go argue with people from different traditions as to who's right and who's wrong about our ideas of the divine, but no one can ever argue with your experience, whether you share it or not. You don't need to share it. That's yours. Keep your experience to yourself and let your life radiate outward from that experience of the vastness, the pure space, the Om, the Absolute. And the more you do that, the more you are experiencing what in Sanskrit is called nirvana, the blowing out of all the things that get in the way of you experiencing the bliss that's in you, that you are. The bliss. You know, in English, if I say, don't think about a green elephant, what do you think about? A green elephant. So in Satchitananda says, don't think of little or fractional things, what does the mind do? It starts thinking of little and fractional things. So this is intellectual advice, but it doesn't really work for our spirit. We think of green elephants if we're told not to. But maybe we can notice that in that Om space, we're not thinking of little or fractional things. We notice that we're just in that Om, the present moment. And the little and fractional things just aren't important in that moment. This doesn't mean we don't sometimes think of little and fractional things. Sometimes it's time to think about things. All right, I've got this thing to think about. I need to decide what to do. Then we apply our intellect to whatever that is we want to figure out. But after we're done figuring it out, half the time figuring out that we can't figure out what it is, what the answer is, we set it aside. We set it aside. And put our experiencing in the Om moment, having the confidence, by the way, that spirit, something inside of us, is going to bring up for us the answer to that question that we've been struggling with. When, as we're struggling with it in the mind, no, when we're in the Om moment more and more, spirit's going to bring up to you the answer for that particular kind of question you were grappling with. Can we have the confidence to wait for that? The patience. Patience is the virtue to wait, to know what is ours to do, to come up naturally, so that in a sense, we are not doing anything. It just came from us, came up, and we appear to others to be doing it, but in a way, we're the I in us is not doing it. We're just doing what came naturally for us to do. Go ahead and think of little or fractional things, but only when you want to. Patanjali says in his Yoga Sutras, if you keep thinking of the infinite, you feel bigger. You feel yourself expanding. So let's see, think of it, you feel bigger, you feel yourself expanding. Well, let's try it and see if we feel bigger and feel ourselves expanding. Let's do that experiment again and just take a deep breath and focus on pure space. Pure space. The vastness. All the omnis. ask ourselves, do we feel ourselves expanding? Pure space. Do we feel ourselves bigger? And expanding, pure space, vastness. That's our little experiment. You may not want to come back from that experience. Such a wonderful place to be. You may want to stay there. But if you do choose to come back right now, you could report and share. Did you feel yourself expanding? Did you feel bigger? Maybe you did, maybe you didn't.
I felt smaller.
Ah, so you felt smaller. Good.
I merge in an orange kind of autumn color, orange or reddish.
Mm. Color. Orange. Wonderful.
So that's all.
Wonderful.
That was inside.
Good. So what we're seeing is each of us has our own space as in this pure space or vastness, has our own experience that comes naturally to us. And through cherishing our own experience, whatever came up, and having it be what is ours to do, that removes another barrier to experiencing the bliss that we originally were in the world and still are.
You brought up something that I'm going to have to work on. And when you had us go into the vastness, and my picture was the universe that was, you know, all the stars and all the galaxies, and those beautiful pictures that you see of the galaxies, and it goes on forever. And then you start talking about omnipresence and omniscient and all that sort of stuff that, to me, was completely different from my view of the universe and
good.
All that vastness.
Good.
And the thought was, by using our minds to take in the concept that this massive thing could have a reason, a purpose, all that sort of stuff, was an opening to allow it to integrate in that picture. So it's going to be interesting to work with that.
The astronomers tell us that the universe is mostly empty space. The parts of the universe that have things, stars, planets, comets, and so on, is a very small part of the universe. Mostly empty space. Perhaps, this is what came up for me, and mm-hmm. something different came up for you. When I envision pure space, and vastness, it's empty. There's nothing whatsoever in it. And it's okay to envision pure space full of things, stars, planets, so on. We could try that. And we could also try having the vastness and the emptiness just be empty, just space, and see if which of those experiences draws us the most. Am I drawn more to having space be filled with stars and things? Or am I drawn more to having vastness and pure space being empty and just energy, pure space, empty, just the vibration and om.
I like that one better.
Maybe pure space is just omnipresent, omniscient. Om. These are opportunities for us and our spiritual practices to see what works for us, to draw us deeper and deeper. It's fun, isn't it?
Yes, but in a very short time, I experienced that beautiful thing, because I was absolutely, like you said, there nothing but this orange thing that I was there.
Yours had orange. Oh, great
it felt
color.
So good, because for first time I didn't have anything, no thoughts, no numbers, no nothing except this orange thing inside.
Cool.
So
wonderful.
It was like really, you know.
So what I'm hearing is, if we're given the opportunity to have these experiences, our own natural intelligence is going to provide us with just the right experience for us. Just the right experience that we can cherish and repeat. We probably ought to close now. Any final sharing or comments before we close?
Thank you.
Thank
it's
you.
I appreciate it, especially the imagination illustration part of it. The empty space.
Empty space. Let's close by focusing on our breath, taking three conscious breaths. And with a deep in breath, Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. And go in peace, my friends.
Thank you.